Okay, I would like to talk about the tricky businesses Fred said, and these businesses hadronic light by light contribution to G minus two, and this is work done in collaboration with Arkady Weinstein. So the outline of the talk is here. I'll have one transparency summarizing the status of G minus two, essentially repeating what Fred said, and then I'll come to this problem of hadronic light by light. I'll first try to formulate clearly what the problem is, and once saying what the problem is, I'll try to essentially explain how we suggest this problem might be solved, and if I have time, I'll also discuss what I call anatomy of the Church-Pine box contribution, and then I'll present my conclusion. So this is the very short summary of the current situation. Here you see two experimental results, they're of experiment 821 at Brookhaven. They are in perfect agreement, or in almost perfect agreement, given the error bars. And the current theoretical predictions, which I take from the paper by Davie Hocker, Edelman, and Zhang, are here. You see that they are in somewhat less fantastic agreement than experimental numbers, and depending on which data set you use to compute hadronic vacuum polarization, whether it's a plus or minus, or a plus or minus data plus tau data, you actually get a difference between experimental and the theoretical value somewhere at this level, which is roughly speaking 1 to 3 sigma. Again, I don't quite define what my sigma is. I don't discuss how I combine theoretical and experimental errors. Roughly speaking, the difference is in this ballpark. And from this, one can essentially, as an order of magnitude estimate, say that all the effects that can potentially give you a shift of about 100 times 10 to minus 11, okay, are important effects. All the effects that give you the shift of the order 10 times 10 to the minus 11 can, at this level of precision, be completely forgotten. Now, it is customary to divide the whole thing into three pieces, and here they're classified according to at least my understanding of as the best understood contributions are QED and electroweak. I wouldn't expect significant changes to occur in these particular contributions, although shifts, as we saw, of the order 10 to the minus, of the order 10 times 10 to the minus 11 are certainly possible. There is one particular contribution which everybody would probably agree is absolutely understood in principle, but it's a good reminder that there is a big difference between in principle and in practice. This is hadronic vacuum polarization. Everybody knows how to do it, and the problem is, but as we see, this issue here is directly related to our inability to turn our understanding in principle into understanding in practice. On the other hand, the last contribution is really the least understood one. It's hadronic light by light, and this is the topic of my talk today. Now, what is the issue with light by light? It's pretty easy to convince oneself that hadronic light by light physics is essentially non-perturbative, and therefore pure ab initio calculations that we are used to in collider physics are to a certain extent not possible. Now, it should be said immediately that currently hadronic light by light scattering is not a major obstacle for comparing theory and experiment. Numerically, this is a contribution comparable to the error on the theory prediction of about 100 times 10 to the minus 11. And so, whether or not we know it with the precision 50%, for example, doesn't really matter. However, if one dreams about continuing this experiment, and if one seriously thinks about improving on the uncertainty in the vacuum polarization, hadronic vacuum polarization, then in the long run, the light by light scattering might become a bottleneck. And therefore, it's interesting to look at this problem. The problem, and therefore the problem setting for the light by light is completely different. In some sense, what we want here is that what we don't know for sure is that the physics that we use to essentially describe it is, you know, correct to an acceptable extent, to a reasonable extent. And unfortunately, we also have no data to compare. And this is a big difference to hadronic vacuum polarization. So the question, which is the sensible question to ask about hadronic light by light, is how to get reasonable central value for this contribution. And once we are there, how to get a solid estimate of the theoretical uncertainty so that we don't fool ourselves. And if you look at the list of recent results which were published on this subject, you immediately see that all of them give more or less the same central value, 80, 90, 83. And the error bars are also, roughly speaking, of the same order of magnitude. And so you might wonder, is there a problem at all? Now, as we know, or as we learned 2 years ago, the fact that there is agreement in the central value doesn't guarantee that the value is correct, even its sign. And so it's probably not a bad idea to have a fresh look at these calculations and to try to see if there is something missing. Now, when I started to look at this about 2 years ago, one of the striking features for me was that no one actually discusses an interplay between the short distance and the long distance contributions to hadronic light by light scattering. It is simply not discussed, or it is not discussed in the terms which are accessible to me. And therefore, I decided to, at least in some very simple way, see if there is a problem. And I can give you a very simple argument, which, you know, requires elementary arithmetic plus the knowledge of published results, which might convince you that there is indeed an issue with how we treat the short distance contributions to this quantity. So, again, you should assume that there are three results, you know, there are multiple calculations of these quantities, and so I'm going to use results from those. It is well known that the pi zero contribution, which is depicted here, you just connect this into the muon line, gives you something of the order 50 times 10 to the minus 11. And the pine contribution is computed by inserting two form factors here and there, which essentially cut this contribution, when the virtualities of these photons become large. In this sense, and according to my nomenclature, this is going to be a long distance contribution. For large values of virtualities, it vanishes. Therefore, if I want to talk about short distance contribution, I have to add to this a diagram which has correct high energy tail. And high energy means 1 GeV. Okay? This is not collider physics. So I want to do this in the most simple way. And to do this, I'll take a diagram where I essentially have a quark contribution running around. Okay, not a pion, but a quark. And I'll take a quark with the mass 300 MeV. And the logic behind this number is that this diagram, okay, has a cut at the value 2 times the mass of the particle which runs inside the loop. And therefore, 2 times 300 is of the order 600, which is comparable to the mass of the raw meson, which is the scale where this contribution is being cut away. If I take the quark loop, it is guaranteed that when the virtualities of these things become large, I have the correct high energy tail. Now, the contribution with the quark box diagram was done many years ago by Laporte and Remedi. And if I take their result, put appropriate color factors, put the mass of the quark 300 MeV, I'll get something of the order 50 times 10 to the minus 11. Now, you see that this contribution is as large as that one. And therefore, at least in this very naive way of doing things, you might expect that the high energy tail can be pretty significant. So, again, as I said, ab initio calculations here are not possible, and therefore, if I want to do something, I have to essentially introduce some theoretical parameter to at least be able to do certain approximation. Now, as was pointed out by de Raphael many years ago, there are essentially two parameters here which one can play with. One is essentially the fact that the mass of the muon is comparable to the mass of the pion at a very small, that both are parametrically small compared to the scale of chiral symmetry breaking, which is of the order 1 GeV. The other parameter, theoretical parameter, is by now glorious NC equals 3 equals infinity, which, you know, gives a direct connection even to string theory in some cases. So the observation from these published results, which I showed you on the previous transparencies, is that in contrast to expectations by many people, including myself. The chiral enhancement is not effective here. So the contribution of charge pions is actually small. And it is the pi zero contribution which is large. Now, if I get to the last part of my talk, I'll try to explain why this happens. But for now, let's assume that this large NC, okay, which is essentially the contributions like that, that the large NC is actually a better parameter for doing these calculations. And let's take it as a working hypothesis, and let's see where we get with this. So from now on, I'm going to forget about these diagrams. Now, the limit of large NC QCD, the limit of large NC is a special limit in QCD, because it can be described by because in this limit, any scattering amplitude can be described by an infinite sum of narrow resonances in any channel for any observable. Now, if you want to get a number, okay, an honest phenomenological number for some observable, knowing that you can describe this observable by an infinite sum of narrow resonances with unspecified masses is not a very useful statement. So the thing we have to do is to make an assumption that for this particular observable, we can actually truncate the sum and work with few lowest resonances when we construct our high energy model. The second observation which one makes is that the leading perturbative QCD piece, which is the quark box contribution, is actually enhanced by large NC. Okay? And therefore, you get a connection between some non-perturbative statement, at least in the large NC limit, and perturbative statement, okay, which is the quark boy, and some perturbative object, which is the light by light scattering going through quark box diagram, which should be valid when the invariant masses of all photons become large. And this is the whole idea. Okay? So in this sense, when I construct my model, okay, which describes the light by light scattering at level energies, I will impose a criterion on this model, which is essentially the following. I construct a model, and then I take it very seriously. I say, this model, although constructed for lower energy hadronic physics, should work even for large values of Q squared. And therefore, if this model doesn't satisfy this criterion, I'm going to change the model. Okay? So, in a way, I introduce a new selection criteria, which requires a perfect or almost perfect matching of the lower energy hadronic models with PQCD. And this should all work in the limit of large NC. So in order to realize this, what we're going to do is essentially a three-step procedure. So the first thing is we will have to compute the gamma star scattering through a quark loop in perturbative QCD. Then we will have to construct the model, which will have a certain number of resonances, as shown here, and for example as rho, which is not shown here. And then we'll have to adjust this model in such a way that when the photons become very virtual, the prediction of the model would agree with the prediction you derive from perturbative QCD. So let's do step one, at least conceptually. This is the light by light scattering diagram. I always work with one of the photons being extremely soft, because this is a magnetic field, okay, by which you probe the anomalous magnetic moment of the muon, and the other three photons will become parts of the virtual loop, and therefore I keep their virtualities arbitrary. So if I write the amplitude for the light by light scattering in appropriate terms, meaning if I express the amplitude through the field strength tensor of this soft photon, I can essentially forget about the small momenta, and then the sum of the three momenta which go into this diagram is zero. So I can choose the invariant masses of these photons as three independent variables with essentially one constraint, and then I can compute this amplitude. Now when I do this, I get a complicated result which essentially has 19 gauge invariant structures and 7 form factors. Now from this you can immediately From this, you can immediately conclude that I'm not going to be able to construct a hadronic model which gives such a complicated object. So again, I have to take a shortcut and do some simplifications. So the scene I observe is the following. In some, at least conceptual sense, there are essentially two very distinct kinematic regimes for the, you know, photon virtualities in, which contribute there. One is one the virtuality of one of the photon legs is actually much smaller than the virtualities of the other two, and then by momentum conservation, these two have to be comparable. So if you think about this thing as a triangle, okay, Q1 plus Q2 plus Q3 equals zero, then this corresponds to the case when the triangle becomes degenerate, it shrinks. And the other regime, when the triangle, you know, is widely open. So I'm going to discuss only these two regimes, and mostly I'm going to discuss this regime because this gives me an easy connection to hadronic world. So instead of showing to you the result of the Onis calculation, I will actually take a shortcut, because in this regime, when two of the momenta of the photons are large compared to the said one, there is a very simple way to compute this amplitude, which is actually very instructive. So let's really take this limit seriously. Let's take Q1 to be of the order of Q2 to be much larger than Q3, and this is always the moment, this is always the photon, which is magnetic field, which has essentially zero momenta. And then let's compute this diagram in the limit of, in the lead in order to 1 over Q1 squared, or 1 over Q2 squared. And in order to do this, the large momenta has to go like this, okay? In order to get the lead in asymptotic, we have to we have to have the large momenta going through the least number of legs. And if you do this, you immediately realize that what you're going to do is to do an operator product expansion of the product of two vector currents. And the operator product expansion of the product of two vector currents is well known. It gives you, actually, an axial current, okay? So if these momenta are large and go like this, then essentially this diagram immediately reduces to that diagram where this blob represents an axial vector current, which is written over here, and this is the result of the operator product expansion. So the complicated light-by-light scattering diagram all of a sudden gets reduced to a diagram which, at least to some extent, we all know. It's a correlator of an axial current, a vector current, and another vector current. Now, the correlator of an axial current and two vector currents has very special properties. In some sense, it is related to pion decay and it's related to anomaly. So this is the thing we're interested in. And as I said, it's very closely related to the pion decay. The only difference with that is that in contrast to the pion decay, I now have a virtual momentum going like this, and one of the vector currents is soft. But this is not a problem because essentially all the arguments which people use to compute pi naught to gamma gamma directly apply to this case. If I do a calculation in perturbation theory, okay, with massless quarks, I'm going to produce a longitudinal structure which would imply that the axial current is not conserved. And this is the statement of the axial anomaly, if you wish. So the longitudinal structure which I generate here has an explicit pole in 1 over Q squared, where Q is the momenta that goes like this. And very similar to what is done in the case of the axial anomaly calculation for pi naught to 2 gamma to 2 gammas, I'm going to say that this pole is not going to be renormalized, either perturbatively or not perturbatively, at least for non-singlet SU3 currents. So this simple exercise gives me a kinematic point in the light-by-light scattering amplitude, where I can make an absolutely exact statement, both at large values of Q squared and at very small values of Q squared. This should become, for the longitudinal structure, this should become the pion pole, okay? And there should be no modifications if there is no explicit chiral symmetry breaking. So this simple exercise, okay, and the recognition of the fact that there is a corner of the phase space for the light-by-light scattering, where the scattering amplitude is directly related to the axial anomaly, this gives me a direct connection between pi zero and perturbative QCD domain. Of course, the situation for ethers, ether primes, for other, which essentially amounts to treating SU3 singular taxial currents, is not that simple, because there, at least we know that there should be a non-perturbative renormalization. But otherwise, it's conceptually similar. And I also have to mention that the other structure which you saw here in this calculation, this structure, which also has a pole-like behavior, can be identified with the axial vector mesons. And essentially, by just looking at this thing and trying to model it, I'm going to construct a model which will have an appropriate high-energy behavior. So my model is going to be the following. I will have to introduce pi zero ethers and ether primes. I'll have to essentially take care of the longitudinal structure on the previous transparency, and I'll have to introduce the pseudo-vector mesons, which are A1, F1, F1 star, to take care of the transversal structure. And the amplitude for the light-by-light scattering, which I'm going to write, will look like this. Now, this looks pretty horrible, okay? But essentially, these are these functions W, which in some sense refer to this blob, to this part of the diagram, this propagator, the soft current and the vector current, and this function phi, which depend on two variables, which will describe this part of the diagram, which essentially, if you wish, will be a transition form factor for gamma star into a resonance. And the same essentially applies here. Now, the sum here runs through an SU3 Clebsch-Gordons, if you wish. It goes over Isospin spin triplet, SU3 singlet, and the octet contribution. So now this model looks terrible, and you know, if you see it for the first time, it's too much probably. But there are two things which I have to say. First of all, the model doesn't have scalar contributions. We don't see them from this very simple limit of the operator product expansion. The model doesn't have explicit vectors here, but the vectors will be included. The vectors like rho will be included into these form factors. So the vectors are there implicitly. And now I'm going to illustrate how this works and why this model matches the high energy asymptotics by essentially considering the case of pi naught. Okay? Now, in the case of pi naught, my model becomes relatively simple. And here are all the parameters of the model written explicitly. For this W longitudinal function, I essentially have the same formula as in perturbative QCD due to the statement that this is an anomalous contribution. But now I include explicitly the terms due to the fact that the chiral symmetry is broken explicitly, which I only account for by introducing the pi mass. And then for this function phi, which I use to describe this part of the diagram where I have two virtual photons producing a pi naught, I essentially write a form factor with some normalization. Okay? Now, for now, this form factor is an unknown function for me. Now, the whole game is to match this, to see how this contribution, under which conditions, okay, this contribution matches the contribution which I, the calculation which I can do in perturbative QCD, okay, for large values of Q squared. So let me take this model literally and say that now Q3 squared, Q1 2 squared, Q2 squared, Q2 squared become large compared to any scale in, you know, hadron world. And let me also say that the Q3 is still going to be smaller than Q1 and Q2, okay? Having said that, I can essentially neglect this term in the formula, and I can restore the asymptotic behavior of this function, okay, by just comparing this simple model with my PQCD result. And when I'm doing, and once, and if I do this, I'm going to derive this formula, which I don't know how many of you remember this explicitly, but this is the large Q squared asymptotic of the Pine form factor in perturbative QCD. So you see that I actually, in order to get a connection of this model to an actual light-by-light scattering amplitude, at least in some very simple kinematic regime, I have to have the Pine form factor correctly normalized at large values of Q squared. Now, this might not be such a great surprise for you, right? But I have to contrast this with what have been done before. Before, people would write an additional form factor in this vertex. An additional form factor in this vertex would scale like 1 over q3 squared if you go to large values of q3. This is by q3. Okay? And therefore, instead of getting a formula like this, you will get a power-like mismatch if you try to match the hadronic models used in previous calculations with the predictions based on perturbative QCD. Okay? So this is the main point. We can now do something somewhat better than a power-like mismatch. Now, here are some details on the pseudoscale exchange, which is on the pseudoscale exchanges, which is Pinot exchange. So now I'm going to take my model seriously, and I'm going to do some real calculations with this. And for this, I'll need to specify the Pine form factor, which people before us have, the Pine transition form factor, Pi gamma star, which people before us have specified. And the result of all this is that the Pine pole contribution increases by approximately 30%. Now, if you recall what I said on the previous transparency, I'm now damping the contribution from the high momenta from the large energy modes. There is a larger contribution from the large momentum modes, and this pushes this result up. There is another thing related to the Pine form factor, a minor detail, which I'm not going to go into, which also pushes the result upwards. And then, in addition to this, it's a very similar situation occurs when you take into beta prime and you account for mixing. These results also go up by approximately 50%. They were 13 times 10 to the minus 11 before. So what I want to say here is that there is a well-defined reason why these contributions go up. And this is you match to the correct asymptotic large values of Q squared. So one can do a check by essentially saying that the whole model was constructed for a degenerate triangle. And now we can open this triangle, make a perturbative calculation, take our model, compare the result of this model for comparable values of Q squared to the result of perturbative calculation. What we will see then is that our model gives, roughly speaking, 30% agreement, which I think is not bad. Then we have to take into account the pseudo-vector contributions. This is a bit more tricky because for those, we are not sure what to take. It's not exactly clear what to take for the spectral density. It's not clear what the SU3 quantum numbers assignment for these mesons is. And so we can play different games trying to, you know, see how stable the result of our model is. What we see is that the results are pretty stable. For example, if you would treat F1 star as a state, as you know, SS bar state, or you would treat F1 star as, you know, the sum of U bar, DD bar, and SS bar. So this is also a very large increase as compared to what other people do. And again, we believe that there are certain well-defined reasons for that. So I'm going to skip this anatomy part because I think I don't have time. And maybe I'll just one very short statement. The statement essentially amounts to that if you carefully look at the contribution of charge pions to hadronic light by light, naively you would say that this is chirally enhanced contribution. If you do a careful calculation and try to see what is the average momentum which goes in this loop, okay, you will find that the momentum is something of the order 500 something MeV. So you would say that the chiral perturbation theory maybe is still applicable, but you actually need very many terms to come up with a realistic prediction, and no one actually knows these terms. So it seems to be a wise idea just to declare this contribution, to say that this contribution is really not chirally enhanced, and just treat it as everything else which doesn't have NC enhancement. There are plenty of such terms which are left behind anything which has been done up to this point on hadronic light by light scattering. And so here are my conclusions. This is our result for hadronic light by light. It's approximately a 50% increase. Now, and our error is also smaller. Now, I have to comment on this very explicitly. The fact that the error is smaller is very subjective, doesn't mean anything. We can, in some sense, equally well write 40 Okay, so don't take this too seriously. We do believe that the error is of this order, but you know, it cannot be very scientifically substantiated. Now, the shift in the central value, on the other hand, we think it is real. And we think it is real because it comes from a well-identified effect. We believe that the shift, I mean, it's not that we believe, we know that the shift comes from the fact that we now have a better control over the high energy tail in this loop. Now, there is a one consistency check. Remember this discussion, which I started with when I was talking about taking the pi naught contribution and adding to it a heavy quark contribution. One of them was around 60, and the other was around 60 times 10 to the minus 11. If you add the two, you will get 120 times 10 to the minus 11. This is the result which we believe is a reasonable estimate, and you see that it, in some sense, consistent with the estimate on this, based on this oversimplified model. So, if you add now everything, you will get a slight increase in the standard model result. But of course, there is, I mean, one cannot really say that it improves anything because, as I said, it significantly improves anything. Because, as I said, the major problem, and as Fred said, the major problem now is hadronic vacuum polarization. I think, at least conceptually, and at least for me, it was nice to see how pion appears from the quark box. I didn't know that before, and I was pretty happy when I saw this. And I don't know how far on this road one can go, if one can further improve this significantly or not. This requires, unfortunately, further thought. Thank you very much.
So if you take the quark box and you cut it in the channel where the only the, in your view, the soft momentum is flowing, then there's some sum of resonances. Do those resonances all come with the same sign, or do they come with alternating signs?
Well, our experience is that they come all with the same sign. But again, we have a very limited number of resonances. So I'm not saying that the spectral density is sign definite. I mean, the spectral density is sign definite. I'm saying that there is a numerator and trace and everything. So I'm not making any local statement. When you integrate, they all add up.
Well, I have not yet carefully read your paper. This number you give, does this include now the full set of contributions? Well, you said there are other contributions, but I mean, I have drawn these three diagrams, so this number really stands for this.
This number stands for the answer, and the answer means that you classify the answer in two terms. There are terms that you can compute, and there are terms that you cannot. And now, the pion box contribution goes into the terms that you cannot compute. Now, you might say that this is not the way to go, but, you know, this is, you know, one can argue about this. And this might change the result by 20 or something in both directions, essentially. But
the next speaker.